Good morning or good afternoon. Welcome to VIREX Partner Research Seminar entitled An Overview of VA-DOD Joint Mortality Data Repository and Data from Studies Conducted by the Epidemiology Program. This session is part of the VA Information Resource Center's ongoing Partner Research Cyber Seminar series. The series' aims are to provide information on the use of operational data resources in research and quality improvement efforts. Sessions highlight various partner research experience as well as operational data resources that are available to VA researchers. Thank you to CIDR for providing technical and promotional support for this series. Questions will be monitored during the talk in the Q&A portion of GoToMeeting and will be presented to the speaker at the end of the session. A brief evaluation questionnaire will come up on your computer screen about 2 minutes before we close the session. If possible, please stay until the very end and take a few moments to complete it. Let us know if there's a specific topic area or suggested speaker that you would like us to consider for a future session. At this time, I would like to introduce our speaker for today's session. Dr. Robert Bussard is the director for the Epidemiology Program in VA's Office of Public Health and holds a faculty appointment in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester. He is co-coordinated with the VA-DOD Joint Suicide Data Repository. And joining him will be Aaron Schneiderman, who also is Deputy Director of the Program for Epidemiology. So without further ado, may I present you Dr. Bussard and Dr. Schneiderman.
Thank you, DeAndre. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We have a fairly ambitious agenda, so we're going to get right into it. We may run out of time at the end, but we'd like to start off by saying Dr. Schneiderman and I will both make ourselves available for questions, and of course you should feel free to contact us by email if we don't have time to address any of your specific questions or comments during today's presentation. Our agenda is to briefly review the existing suicide data repository and to answer as many questions as we can about data that are currently held by the repository, plans for expansion, the process for obtaining access to information maintained in the repository. I'd also like to introduce you to something that we're calling Viewer, a resource we believe will have benefit for program offices and researchers across VA. It's in its beta phase right now, but we felt that this would be a good opportunity to introduce a broader population to the resource itself and to extend an invitation to anyone who may be interested to help us by being a beta user and actually begin using the resource and get providing some feedback about what we might need to address or change. Then we'd like to provide a brief overview of our existing population rosters and existing studies conducted by the Epidemiology Program. Dr. Schneiderman will be taking those two areas. And the purpose for discussing those today is we get a lot of requests for information either from the rosters or from the studies conducted by the Epidemiology Program. In line with the information about the repository and that information contained within Viewer, we thought this would be a good opportunity to present a broad overview of information that was collected in the service of epidemiologic programs and studies, and to discuss opportunities for either accessing data if possible or the process for collaborating on such initiatives if those exist as well. So we'll start with the Suicide Data Repository, which is alternately referred to as the Suicide Data Repository or Military Mortality Database. The background on the Suicide Data Repository is really an outgrowth out of the 2009 Joint Strategic Plan, which required the development of a suicide, a suicide nomenclature working group that was initially chartered with finding mechanisms or process for aligning VA and DOD nomenclature as it relates to suicide. By the time that the workgroup was actually formed, both parties had signed off on using the self-directed violence classification system, and we quickly turned our attention to other gaps that we had in conducting surveillance or understanding characteristics of risk for suicide. We quickly identified data gaps as our largest problem, and the fact that neither DOD nor VA had a comprehensive system for collecting data on or longitudinal suicide data that would cover everything from suicide attempt and death from suicide during active duty service to National Guard Reserve and comprehensive information on suicide among veterans following service. Specifically, we knew that data were limited in their ability to identify suicide for inactive Guard and reservists. Longitudinal or long-term looks at risk for suicide among veterans themselves, although either following short service periods or long-term outcomes following suicide attempt, or reliably report on topics requiring access to information about veterans, specifically suicide after deployment, risk for suicide following separation from service, for those veterans who did not use VHA services. Just very quickly, since 2006, but the data go back to 2000, VA has been obtaining information from the National Death Index, the cause of death information for anyone who had history of VHA service use in the year before or of their death. But obviously that information was limited to only those veterans who used VHA services, and we were unable to speak about the larger burden of suicide or characteristics of suicide among the entire veteran population. This joint initiative was an effort to do just that, to expand our current data holdings to collect information on veteran suicide and among the entire veteran population, not just those who use VHA services. It was initially agreed upon and developed in 2011, and we developed it as a comprehensive archive of data on suicide and other forms of mortality among U.S. veterans and active duty service members. We refer to it, therefore, as the Suicide Data Repository, and it builds upon efforts of both agencies to support studies of suicide mortality and address gaps in previous knowledge. Obviously, these data are only obtainable through collaboration with the National Death Index, and so VA's existing protocol of obtaining information on NDI for all users of the VHA services was expanded through this collaboration with the Department of Defense and now includes information on anyone who separates from active duty service. So beginning in 2012, which was the first year that we, I'm sorry, 2013, which is the first year that we actually submitted data, we transitioned from an NDI search of cause of death information for only those who use VHA services to cause of death information for anyone who used VA services or separated from active duty military service. Excuse me. Those of you familiar with DoD records know that there are some limitations in the availability of electronic data, specifically electronic data that's needed for searches of National Death Index is really only considered reliable until around the early 1970s. For the purposes of this joint initiative, we initially decided to start it with January 1, 1974 as our first date of search. Therefore, included in the repository for the 2010 and 11 search, which was the first new data acquired in this collaboration, we included anybody who separated from active duty military service beginning in January 1, 1974, through the end of calendar year 2011. And we expanded our existing VHA service search, which would now include anybody who used VHA services beginning in fiscal year 2000 and through fiscal year 2011. And that's a lot of information to throw at you at once. And so it'll be, we'll have an opportunity to discuss it again as we move forward, and also as presented graphically a little bit later on. Importantly, while our primary purpose for obtaining the data was to get information on death from suicide, as part of the search process, we obviously obtain information on all-cause mortality. In our preliminary discussions with the Centers for Disease Control about doing a joint search, it was agreed that due to the vast amount of information that we'd be collecting through this collaboration, we would make the information that we obtain available to all researchers within Department of Veterans Affairs and Department of Defense. So anybody who's a DOD or VA affiliated investigator, which generally means that you have appointments in a VA, either a VA or DOD appointment, you can now obtain information that was collected as part of this search free of charge. And we'll talk a little bit about the process for getting that information and some restrictions on its use. But it does mean that individual users in VA and DOD are no longer required to go to the National Death Index to do their own searches of NDI data if they're interested in cause of death information for study participants or program participants. Just very quickly, and I'll move to this slide quickly to save time, but the development of a VA and DOD suicide data repository was actually a long time in development. It began with the Blue Ribbon Work Group on Suicide Prevention, which talked about the need to expand information on suicide mortality beyond what was currently available or available on death certificates. We do know that there are biases associated with determining veteran status on death certificates, although this information is frequently reported both in more academic studies and most frequently in media reports of veteran suicide mortality. Studies conducted by VA researchers and those outside of VA have shown that the veteran death certificate identifier is fairly accurate, 70 to 90% reliable, but there are gaps in the information that you could obtain from that source, and also some limitations when talking about suicide rates among smaller, less represented populations. So having a definitive gold source standard data set that could be used to obtain not just information on suicide, but all-cause mortality was clearly a benefit. There are some limitations when combining DOD and VA data for this purpose. However, those limitations we'll talk about in a little bit, and we believe they're being addressed. It does require that we link data from multiple sources, including VA clinical records, Department of Defense data sources, which involve any number of data sources across the branches of service and the administrative record archives, and information from population-specific rosters maintained here in VA and Office of Public Health. And information from all those sources needs to be brought together, deduplicated, and used to search national death index data. I can provide details to anybody who's specifically interested in either the deduplication process or the validation process, but we believe that the final product that we've been able to put together through this collaboration greatly exceeds both the availability and the quality of previous information by combining multiple data sets and algorithms for case ascertainment. The final product that is the data archive itself includes a case validation process that we believe greatly exceeds anything that we've previously used, and therefore we have greater confidence in the mortality records that we put forward. So currently, the Suicide Data Repository includes the CDC's National Death Index Plus records. The combined search for VA and DOD records spanned the entire availability of National Death Index data. So for that cohort that separated beginning in January 1st, 1974, we searched for all-cause mortality for all available years of the National Death Index, which is 1979 through 2011. Added to that was the VHA search for years for the fiscal years 2010 and 2011, which was the most recent years to be added to VA's existing archives. That total search was about 26.5 million records, which did contain a meaningful number of duplicates and yielded 2.5 million confirmed deaths. That information, when added to VHA's existing NDI data for the fiscal years 2000 through 2011, created an archive of just around 9 million known deaths among veterans and users of VHA services between the years 1979 and 2011. The components of the mortality data, in particular the search file, included the Social Security Administration Master Death Registry, the Active Duty Master File, the Reserve Components Common Personnel Data Systems, Defense Casualty Analysis System, Active Duty Transaction File. Those are all the files DOD uses to either search for mortality or identify those who have died to obtain cause of death information, VHA clinical data, and population rosters. For the first search, we included information from our Gulf War and OEF-OIF-OND roster. Subsequent searches will expand that a little bit. So this just tries to graphically represent the information on hand, and I'm not sure if I've actually hit the mark here, but it was an attempt. It's a little bit confusing because we do not have information for VHA users for the same time period that we have information for everyone who's separated from the military, and there is obviously some overlap. But the greatest information that we have available in terms of the number of years available is anyone who separated after January 1st, 1974. We do have a five-year gap between 1974 and 1979 where someone could have died. We would not have that information because NDI does not go back that far. Beginning in January 1st, 1974, anyone who separated and died after 1979 through 2011 would have their cause of death information included in the repository. That would include those who separated between 1974 and 2011 who were also VHA users, but importantly, the VHA user population also brings in older adult veterans who would not be included in the DOD search. So there is some duplication. We do have the ability to distinguish between those who used VHA services between 2000 and 2011, and those who were did had no known record of VHA service use. Obviously, they could have used VHA services before 2000, and we wouldn't have that information in there. But those two pieces together, while presented here as being somewhat mutually exclusive, are not. But there are different date ranges for the two different data systems. This is a graph that just sort of shows our data holdings, and it's the number of deaths from suicide that are in the repository for each year the repository is available. I present it to show one thing, and that is not that there's been a dramatic growth in the number of deaths from suicide over the time period, but there's been an increase in the coverage of the veteran population as we bring in each new year's worth of data. So that final figure of just over 5,600 or 5,800 deaths from suicide in 2011 is not, in fact, a function of a dramatic increase in the rate of suicide among veterans, at least not that we can calculate using the data on hand. But as each year moves forward, we accumulate a larger search population, and we therefore identify more people who die from suicide. You'll see a fairly dramatic jump between the years 2000 and 2001. That dramatic jump is simply the addition of the VHA user population and not necessarily a dramatic jump in the number of suicides. I wanted to keep this slide in here just to point out one caution as people think about using the data. We do know that between 1979 and 2011, our population coverage, or the proportion of the veteran population that we can capture with this repository, continues to grow. We do know that we're nowhere near 100% yet, although we don't have an exact estimate of coverage that I can provide for you today. But by 2011, we believe we're capturing a meaningfully larger proportion of the veteran population. Our best guess at this point is maybe 60 to 70% of the total veteran population, perhaps a little bit higher. But we do know that rates of suicide or any other cause of mortality over the time period will be affected by the total proportion of the veteran population that we included within our search of NDI data. So as you think about potentially using this resource and what you might have available in there, we're really good. We have really good coverage if the person or the population, the entire population of interest separated after 1974, or if the entire population of interest used VHA services from 2004. If they separated prior to 1974 or they were not a VHA user from 2004, we do not have information available right now to conduct search of NDI data, and it's very likely they would not be included in this repository. So very quickly, we're preparing for the 2012 and 2013 search of data. That information is available from the Centers for Disease Control now. The search rosters are being prepared for submission and search. If the last search was any measure for the amount of time it's going to take to bring that information in and get it cleaned up, we're probably looking at late summer, early fall before the 2012 and 13 data will be available. I mentioned before the last year's search was in excess of 26 million records. This year's search with the addition of 2012 and 13 data looks like it'll be closer to 40 million records. Those all have to be processed at 500,000 records at a time. The Centers for Disease Control, the search results are then returned to VA and DOD, where we go through a validation and case ascertainment process. So we're pretty far away, although we're pretty excited about the information that we're able to bring forward to the National Death Index this time. In addition to the addition of 2012 and 2013 service members who suffered from service and those who used VHA services in 2012 and 13. We've added information from Office of Public Health's Vietnam Veterans Roster that Dr. Schmaderman will talk about in a little bit here, which will add about 3.1 million Vietnam veterans. Obviously, a good number of those veterans suffered before 1974. So we'll move back our population coverage a little bit, although we'll still have gaps in mortality until 1979 when National Death Index starts. And the Office of Policy and Planning has offered to provide information on all known veteran deaths between 1979 and 2011, which could add up to another 10 million known deaths to the data file. We're still pending cost estimate for what this will actually, what the expense will be associated with the search, and it's not clear yet whether we have sufficient funds available to conduct the complete search. But if funds are available and if we can get that information forward to NDI within the next couple of weeks, which is our timeline, and we're able to include this entire population, it would mean that we would have total population coverage, at least to the best of all available electronic data, for total veteran mortality between 1979 and 2013. Access, as I said before, is available to any VA or DOD-affiliated investigator. This is a rather lengthy slide. I know they're going to be made available to people later, so I'll provide just a quick overview. After the data were obtained, a charter was written. The charter was signed off on by both DOD and VA. So access to the data is now governed by a charter. And the charter includes two co-chairs, Ms. Jackie Garrick from the Defense Suicide Prevention Office and Dr. Caitlin Thompson from the Suicide Prevention Program in VA, and two core coordinators, myself and Mr. Chris Dorr from the Defense Suicide Prevention Office. In addition to the four of us, there's a 10-person board of governance that reviews all applications. We review those applications every quarter and provide, once approved, assist the investigators or program offices with obtaining data from the National Death Index. The Board of Governance, importantly, does not conduct a scientific review. It simply reviews the applications for data safety and security and use of data that's consistent with our approved application with the National Death Index. And just one important caveat that I ask everybody to keep in mind, the data that were obtained through an agreement with CDC for use of the information for the suicide prevention programs, and so it has very specific parameters for how it would be used. Because the amount of information that was available is going to exceed all other available information sources, and because VA and DOD were already paying for this information, CDC has agreed that we can make this information available to others. However, access is ultimately being facilitated by a single application, and we just need to make sure that the use of the data is consistent with the parameters that are outlined in the application itself. That's the job of the Board of Governance, to be able to make sure that the use of the data is appropriate. And the secondary is just to make sure that investigators' projects aren't overlapping to the degree that they're duplicative, and if so, we may let the investigators know about existing research projects so that those program investigators or those offices can get together and work out any overlap to the degree that we have unique efforts happening. The charter recognizes three types of access. There's exempt access, and an exempt user would not require access to individually identifiable data. DOD is working on what they call the personnel or protected data environment, which will allow any VA or DOD affiliated investigator to log into the Defense Manpower Data Center and do remote analyses without actually ever abstracting or accessing the individual level data. This really only will work if your interest is in conducting analyses that don't require linkage with existing data sets or other clinical records. Expedited proposals are those that are done in support of program operations or evaluation, and they require a letter authorizing the program from either a senior executive service member, program lead, or in the DOD's case, a flag ranking officer. Most projects are what we call full review and are access to individual level data, individually identified data. Those have to be accompanied by an NDI application and proof of IRB and R&D approval. There are non-disclosure agreements that are required to be signed by each person who will actually access the data or be participating in analyses, and it requires identification of both the principal investigator and a data steward, who have to be two different people for the application to be approved. Graphically, requests are submitted to either myself, if you're a VA user, or to Chris Dorr, if you're with DOD. We'll work with you to get the application ready for submission and review. That will be forwarded to the Board of Governance, again, who meets every quarter. And within two to three weeks, we try to get everybody notification of the results of the review and any changes that are required to be made. We try to work with investigators to address any potential and shortcomings in their application before BOG review. We're not always perfect at it, so there are occasionally things that we miss. In those cases, the most typical outcome is what we call a conditional approval, and your application will be approved pending the changes required by the Board of Governance. We'll work with you, either myself or Shanna Smith, who's the program officer for this, working with us in the epidemiology program. We'll work with you to get any address any remedial requirements, and then work with you to get your application approved and data delivered following final approval of your application. Just very quickly, some special considerations, things that our application with the National Death Index will not allow us to do is link data from the suicide data repository to existing registries. We understand there are a lot of clinical registries across VA, and that there's frequently interest in mortality being added to those registries. We have worked with CDC to obtain approval to do that. However, the use of those data have to be restricted to the principal investigators or investigative team who maintains the registry. Providing that information outside of the investigators requires an additional step and additional signed non-disclosure agreements. It's limited to participation from non-VA or non-DOD investigators is possible, but providing them with access to the identified data or providing them with a data set is not. So at this time, all data are required to be maintained behind VA or DOD firewalls. Linkage to third-party data sources, such as adding that information to a survey conducted by the National Center for Health Statistics and making that information available to others, is also strictly prohibited. And NDI requires that the data be retained for a maximum of 5 years. That's a challenge given current VA data retention and use guidelines. So no new thought in the application will be asking you for your date of destruction or intended destruction of the data. We also understand that's not possible. So all VA users are on a rolling 5-year re-review cycle where within 5 years we'll reach back out to you and confirm that you intend to retain the data and retaining it in a way consistent with your agreement. And then we'll move forward for another 5 years until this can be resolved. That's a slide that you can review on your own later, just to remind you of some of the things that require the PI, principal investigator signature, data steward signature, IRB, documentation, R&D for VA investigators, and some of the physical, technical, administrative controls limiting access to the data are all necessary components of your application. So in the next few minutes, before I give this off to Dr. Schneiderman, I just want to introduce everyone to what we're calling the Veteran Integrated Epidemiology Web-Based Resource, or Viewer, which is an introduction and an overview. Viewer was specifically designed to facilitate easy access and at least descriptives and frequencies for data obtained through agreement with DOD and maintained within the OAF, OIF, OND service member registry. And it's a comprehensive integrated resource. It's a web-driven platform that allows for analysis of data from the OAF, OIF, OND registry and quick review of clinical records for those who use VHA services. It's available for all OAF, OIF, OND veterans who are available on the OIF, OAF, OND roster that Dr. Schneiderman will talk about in a few minutes to give you a little bit more detail. But essentially, anyone who's been deployed in service of operations in Iraq and Afghanistan is included within that roster, including National Guard and Reserve, who have been activated. You can use this resource to look at the demographic and service-related characteristics of that population, but also for those who use VHA services to look at service use to look at the incidence and prevalence of diagnoses and by facility visit and other ways of stratifying the data that give you an opportunity to explore the clinical characteristics as well as their demographic and service-related characteristics remotely by logging into this resource. In addition to the entire population, we maintain a number of different registries. These are listed here. And you can also do analysis of veterans included in these different registries, those with traumatic brain injury, those with mental health disorder, infectious disease, the female veterans registry, and then the polytrauma registry or roster as well, are all sub-rosters contained within the larger OEF, OIF, OND roster. All those are linked into this resource and available for search. So what you're able to do with this is to generate frequency distribution and crosstabs using data in the roster, to analyze healthcare utilization data and do some basic distributions and crosstabs and limited chi-square analyses to test for differences between the two groups. What you cannot do at this time is download the data for your use locally, although Dr. Schneiderman will talk to you about how you might be able to work with the program to be able to obtain access to data for this population in particular in just a few minutes. The data are maintained on a VA-approved website, but they're not on a VA server. So there's a data use process and access process, which is required. Specifically, you can contact the epidemiology program. Myself or Dr. Schneiderman will put you in touch with the program manager for this effort. You'll be required to sign a data use agreement, which is basically a non-disclosure agreement and recognition of the privacy standards and use standards that are applied to this specific population. And you will be provided with access to the remote server and login credentials to get in and use the data. Once in, it looks something that looks exactly like this. And this is just a quick example of a screen, a graphical presentation of branch of service of, among everyone in the roster. You can also look at visit characteristics, personal characteristics, or service characteristics. You can generate reports for specific visits or drill down to specific facilities if you're interested in looking at the characteristics of OEF, OIF, OMD veterans in a particular visit or in a particular facility. Or you can drill down and look at the distribution or the characteristics of veterans or frequency of veterans with specific diagnoses. And again, you can search for codes by the name of the condition or the specific ICD-9 code. You can select the position, whether it's primary, secondary, or any. And you can look at the disease categories or specific conditions broken down into 3, 4, or 5-digit ICD-9 codes. So it allows for a great degree of specification when looking at the distribution or the exact condition of interest. You can do some limited analyses, again, only chi-squares stratified by group, and you cannot print or download the data at this time, but it will allow you to get in, actually perform some limited analyses, and also understand the prevalence of veterans with a specific diagnosis at a given facility or isn't, if the research on that population is of interest. That's just an example of the analysis, and in the sake of time, I think I'll move forward and hand off at this point to Dr. Schneiderman, who's going to talk to you a little bit about our population rosters and existing studies.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bosser. Please move to the next slide. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon or this morning, and I am I'm going to be moving briskly through the slides. The details are here, and if you download the slide deck, there are backup slides with additional information. I'm going to do my best to leave us room in the Q&A, and if there are additional questions you have following the presentation, I'm available by phone or email. Dr. Bosser had talked about the Vietnam Veterans Roster. It's about 3 million people on a list that was obtained from DOD in the mid-1990s, and it was augmented through efforts of the epidemiology program, reaching out to states that offered benefits to combat veterans, and also matching it with BIRLS, the VBA Beneficiary Identification Record Locator System. That kind of beefed up or added some detail to the roster. However, as you can appreciate, electronic records weren't universally available in the personnel systems of DOD, so we had questions about how complete this roster would be for individuals that were in Vietnam, or even if it was specific to Vietnam and not just the Southeast Asia theaters generally. You can see there the data elements limited to some basic demographics and military information. A couple years ago, we took this roster and sampled and had the sample validated against records in the National Personnel Records Center, which is a part of archives. And in doing so, we had service characteristics and service activity validated for about 1,300 people in a stratified sample. And what that demonstrated was that over 90% of the records, in fact, did represent individuals in the Vietnam service area. However, one of the considerations we've had is incompleteness of personnel records, as I mentioned a moment ago, and the fact that at the beginning of the conflict in Vietnam, Social Security number was not the universal identifier utilized for our military personnel. There was something called the service number. And so there was kind of an awkward period in which we may not have captured people who don't have a Social Security number, or Social Security numbers may be in error. We are moving forward to do some work with this roster. Dr. Bostert had mentioned working with the VA level Office of Policy and Planning, and we hope to be able to work with them to both validate the records in this deployed part of the Vietnam roster, as well as understand the non-deployed sample, which will give us some access to understanding the non-deployed, who we will compare with the deployed, for example, when we go to search mortality records or look for those who may be VHA users. It is this population-based view of the veterans that has distinguished the work of our office or made us a little bit different, because we try to capture in our samples those individuals who are both not deployed and not users of VHA. Next, please. I make that comment about the non-deployed and non-VHA users, and you'll see that's a continuing theme. This slide describes the Gulf War veteran roster, which captures over 600,000 individuals who served in 1990-91 Gulf War operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm. At the time that we got this list from DOD, they also provided about 740,000 individuals who did not deploy. That sample, a stratified random sample, represents about 50% of the non-deployed personnel who served at the same time as those who went to operations Desert Shield or Desert Storm. Again, basic demographic and military service characteristics. We've used these rosters both to conduct mortality studies out of our office as well as morbidity studies looking at VHA users and as the basis for sampling for a survey effort that I'll discuss in a few minutes. Next slide, please. So Dr. Bossert talked about the OEF-OIF-OND roster file. We in Epidemiology Office of Public Health get this file on a monthly basis from the Defense Management Data Center, or actually Defense Manpower Data Center. We actually receive two files every month, one of the active duty personnel who separate from the DoD, and those who are reserve and guard who are not currently serving. Both of these files represent individuals who have had service in OEF, OIF, or OND. On a quarterly basis, we match these files to the outpatient and inpatient treatment files and capture all the individuals who have healthcare use from VA. At the bottom, you can see that there are additional files we match to or match with, including working with the Readjustment Counseling Service. Those are the folks that run our vet centers. With the vet centers, we don't necessarily get any identified data back, but we are able to enumerate individuals who visit the vet centers and have treatment or visits related to a diagnosis of PTSD. Next slide, please. The roster file that we get for OEF, OIF, OND is distributed throughout VA, and that includes VBA and VHA offices who use this information to determine eligibility, provide benefits and health care, and conduct outreach activities. Rarely this entire roster file, or samples from the roster file, I should say, are available to researchers. The healthcare file, that is when we take the roster and match it to the inpatient and outpatient healthcare users, is available for researcher use. And we also use this to generate responses to Freedom of Information Act requests, requests for information from the media, requests for congressional inquiries, et cetera. This also is shared within VA to other users who have need of this information. If we go to the next slide, this is a pretty dense slide in small font, and I apologize, but if you look at this, you'll see that there are a number of different reports that we generate when we use the roster file and combine it with the healthcare files. Of note are the reports that we now put on the web, which provide an overview of the ICD-9 codes, the top 10 mental health ICD-9 codes, and utilization within the major categories of ICD-9, as well as providing demographic data and military data about the VHA users. There's also a specific PTSD report that is found on the web. You can see when we look at overall healthcare utilization report on the top line, and then the special requests described at the bottom, there are a number of special or ad hoc reports that we generate on a regular basis, including mental health reports that are specific to women veterans, reports that are specific to reserve and guard versus active duty personnel. Next slide, please. So for researchers who are interested in accessing the OEF, OIF, OND, VHA users for research, the request process is handled by DART. And going to DART, there are instructions on how to do that, a template for the DUA, and on this slide, my contact information as well as in the instructions. Once you get into DART, if you've never used DART before, it automatically triggers individuals who need to respond, and that's how we proceed. Basically, once you're into DART with a request, I would be working with you independently through email to make sure we get the DUA to read correctly and satisfy your requirements and our requirements, and then we can proceed to generate a data set for your use. For operations use, that is, if you're conducting analytic operations that are not capital R research, IRB-approved research, the contact is Eric Ishii, who is also in the Office of Public Health. Next slide, please. So briefly, next slide, I'm going to talk about a few of the data collection efforts that we handle in our office, and I'm going to try and do this in about 3 minutes. I talked about the restrictions or limitations in working with the Vietnam roster. The Army Chemical Corps study is one that we started in the epidemiology program in the late 1990s, and in the absence of an electronic list to identify individuals who served in Vietnam, Dr. Kong went back to the training rosters, musters, for individuals who had gotten Army Chemical Corps training, knowing that this was a group who were likely to have exposure to herbicides, many of whom went to Vietnam handling herbicides. And this study really parallels, if you've ever heard of the Ranchan study or the Air Force Health Study, DOD's effort to understand the impact of herbicide and dioxin exposure on health. This slide describes the most recent study we did with this panel of veterans. There are approximately half who served in Vietnam and half who did not serve in Vietnam, all of whom were in uniform from 1965 to 1973. This study included a questionnaire, a medical records retrieval, and an in-home visit for a subgroup, about 600 folks were sampled, about 400 actually completed. You can see the response there. Next slide, please. There's more on the Army Chemical Corps in the backup slides or by individually contacting us. We are working on the first analyses from the Army Chemical Corps and hope to see some of these things being briefed up to leadership as well as presented in this peer-reviewed literature. The Gulf War follow-up study is our most recent survey opportunity with a panel we've been following since 1995. The question really is, are those who deployed to the Gulf War in 1991 experiencing better, worse, or the same level of health as those who did not deploy? A wide range of health domains were queried. There was an oversample of women, so we had a great opportunity to look at gender-specific outcomes as well as mental health and physical health outcomes. It really is a population-level assessment. It's not restricted, as I noted before, to individuals who use VA, but gives us an opportunity to understand a good sample of those who served during that time period, whether they deployed or not, whether they used VA or not. As you can see in the final bullet here, we surveyed in 95, 2005, and just recently in 2013. Historically, we've used mail and telephone for this panel. In 2013, we used a web survey as well. Next slide, please. This slide gives you an idea of the stratified random sample plan that was applied to the deployed and non-deployed. Next slide. I'm not going to dwell on this, but basically in 1995, the individuals who deployed had a higher prevalence of health compromise, whether it was functional impairment, health conditions, or symptoms. One publication is noted down there, Dr. Kong in 2000, but there were many publications from this initial survey. Next slide, please. In 2005, there was persistence of health compromise among the deployed. However, as this population has aged, both the deployed and non-deployed show increasing incidence of health compromise. Next slide. So before I move on from the Gulf War panel, I will note that the 2013 data is currently being analyzed. We've begun briefing on the data from that survey, both to the Gulf War Veterans Illnesses Research Advisory Committee, DHA leadership, and there are a number of analyses that are ongoing, both looking at mortality, at chronic mental, at chronic multi-symptom illness, and at a variety of different health outpoints, I should say. So briefly, the Gulf Air Twin Registry. Colleagues in ORD approached us and looking for collaborators, and we were able to launch this effort. We are currently looking at the recruitment of twin pairs who've separated since 2002. It is titled the Gulf Era Twin Registry because of our desire to reach back further to capture twins who've served from 1990 forward. Hopefully this effort is going to give us a nice panel of twins for researchers who are interested in working with twins. Twins research in veterans populations has been successful in World War II era twins and the Vietnam era twin registry, which is still generating valuable results today. We are currently in the field recruiting using a multimodal survey, paper, web, and telephone. Next slide, please. Next slide. Great. So a large effort with OEF, OIF, OND veterans is the New Generation Study. Again, looking at a non-deployed and deployed sample and completed some of that work. We've got publications in the field. We're continuing analysis, and we're now planning our second visit to this panel of OEF, OIF, OND veterans. And you can see there we started with a panel of 60,000 split between deployed and non-deployed, and we're going to augment that with individuals who had served and separated after the period of time that we sampled for the first study. Next slide, please. Great, and there is our website, and I'm going to close and go to questions now about anything we've spoken about in the last 50 minutes. Thank you.
And for questions, if you guys could take the opportunity in the GoToWebinar pane on the right-hand side of your screen, there is a questions pane in there. Please submit those questions, and we will go through those on the call here. Thank you.
Hello. I have one question that just came in. Someone is asking how to access VIEWR.
Thank you. Yeah. To access the viewer, if you could just send, this is Rob Ostert, if you just send me an email, I can route you to Dr. Deborah Doherty, who will get you moving with the appropriate forms to get access to that resource.
Okay. Thank you. We'll give everyone a few more moments, a few minutes to see if any other questions.
While we're waiting, I'll comment that the viewer is a fairly new portal, and we're just beginning testing with having multiple users access at the same time. So we're excited to be able to present it today and look forward to a few brave souls stepping forward to give us that opportunity to see how well this resource serves multiple users.
All right, and another question came in. They want to know how do they access your slides, and are there opportunities to add items to the to the National Health Study? So kind of twofold question.
Actually, those are two separate questions, and I'll put up the link to the slides in the questions pane for everyone.
I thought I was going to get the slides will be available to everyone, I understood.
Okay.
And I'm assuming the question is adding questions to the next round of the New Generation Survey of OEF Veterans. That survey is still under development, but the domains are fairly well fixed at this point. It's an attempt to follow up on the previous study. If investigators have any specific questions or suggestions, please feel free to send them forward. However, there's very little room for change at this point.
Okay, and another question. A person interested in usage of web-based surveys with veterans within VHA, they want to know, are there many concerns about maintaining veterans' privacy via Internet, and what instruments did you utilize to administer web-based surveys to veterans?
Dr. Schneiderman, you want to take that one?
Well, and they continue to say, was it MyHealthyVet or some other mechanism?
That's a great question, and I'll be happy to begin to address it, but we could probably talk about this for a long time. We have used the services of contractors to develop and house our web surveys. I don't know what particular programs they used in developing these. However, when you work with a contractor who's going to be handling PII or PHI of our veteran population, they need to meet fairly stringent information or information technology security requirements. So, for example, getting what's called the ATO or authority or authorization to operate has taken one of our contractors a year. I think that demonstrating both as we have with our program and as some other ORD investigators have demonstrated, the success and importance of web-based surveys, that we're going to hopefully see the envelope pushed a little bit so that we can do this from inside the VA firewall. But there's always a risk when you open the firewall to outsiders, that is, those who are not, you know, users within the firewall. It creates a vulnerability for the system, and that's where the hesitation has been, I think. In terms of the surveys that we put up, because we've usually started with a paper survey, the web-based surveys have been made to emulate paper. However, the screen length or the amount of information that's viewed at any time is limited. One thing that's done to secure the information, since people might have an opportunity to log in and log out of their own survey, right? They have a PIN and a password to get in that's assigned to them. Once you move past a certain page that may have sensitive information, the survey can be locked. So if, for example, a veteran gets up and walks away from their computer and another person in their household sees the computer open, they can't scroll back and see how sensitive questions may have been answered. That's just one way that we secure the information once a veteran is actually doing a survey. I hope that helps.
All right, thank you. We have a few more questions. It says, in the slide on the number of suicide deaths per year, why not use rate at the end since the sample probably increases over time?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please?
In the slide on the number of suicide deaths per year, why not use rates instead of N since the sample probably increases over time?
That's an excellent suggestion. The point was not to try to provide any information on rates of suicide, and it's a little more difficult than just taking the denominator in the database and trying to use it to calculate a rate, since we don't really know yet what the coverage is for the different veteran populations. And so we could certainly calculate a crude rate at this time. However, we don't feel that would be particularly useful or informative. And the goal of the slide was really just to provide an overview of the information available, an example of how the numbers change with increasing coverage. Information on rates of suicide among particular subpopulations are being calculated at this time and will be released in the very near future.
All right, thank you. And the next question is, can you clarify what third-party data sources cannot be linked to the suicide data repository?
Yeah, that's specifically referring to outside registries or outside data sources. So anything that comes from a non-VA or non-DOD entity that would be of interest to linking data to, in this case, VA acquired information on mortality from the National Death Index. The concern is not necessarily adding that information to third-party data sources, but the release of that information to third-party investigators as well, or not solely limited to the use of third-party data sources. So it's specifically a prohibition or a limitation, at least, on use of third-party data sources such as surveys or registries, clinical registries from outside agencies, and limiting access to that information to VA DOD investigators. If anybody has a specific purpose or use, intended use that would meet, you know, fall into that category, please feel free to contact me. We're, you know, this is a process that's very much in development, and we continually encounter circumstances that we didn't anticipate as when we set the guidelines in place. So if there's a specific intended use or a specific need, please contact me, and we'll work with you and Centers for Disease Control to see if we can identify a solution.
Okay. All right, another question. In SDR, how were the diagnoses validated? Are they solely from ICD-9 codes and death certificates?
So the only diagnoses that we would use would be the cause of death as recorded on the death certificate, and any other information about clinical diagnoses would come from VHA clinical records or DOD clinical records and would follow the user or agency standards for identifying diagnoses. We don't in any way change the identified or contributing causes of death that are available from the National Death Index through death certificates. We take those as reported by the states.
Thank you. Our last question for this session would be, do you use data from Vinci?
So we do not use data from Vinci for, I think, any of the data collection efforts or projects that were reviewed today. However, the data from the Suicide Data Repository can be accessed by researchers who use Vinci to store and analyze their data. We work with the Vinci data managers and have a process for Vinci data managers to pull a data set that we then contribute cause of death information to and re-upload into the user space in Vinci. So if you're using Vinci for a research project, we can certainly work with you to obtain access to data from the Suicide Data Repository.
I would echo that the OEF-OIF roster data for users within Vinci can be delivered in that space directly to your work folder.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Broussard and Dr. Schneiderman, for taking the time to develop and present this talk. Everyone, please forward remaining questions to our presenter, or you can send them to Virex Help Desk at virex@va.gov. Our next session is scheduled for Tuesday, March 17th, and the speaker will be Dr. Steve Wright, and his title is External Peer Review Program in Patient Advocate and Satisfaction Data. I hope you all can join us for that next session. Thank you all.
Thank you.